Hey, good morning, everybody. Let's get this microphone turned on pretty much. Oh, there's a little funny buzz going on. All right. Okay, so this is Bible 231, and it is September 2nd. This is the lecture part of the class. And usually I remember to ask to see if we have any announcements from SI. Any announcements? So you're going to go over the same stuff that they're responsible for, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah. It's okay if there's a little bit of repetition because how do you learn new things?
Repeating it and by teaching other people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Yeah. So repetition is one of the keys.
Yeah, and I've got all the study guides and what you recommend, too, so I'm pulling information from there. So it helps if you come in and you talk to other people and process the information in different ways.
It does really help. Even if you sit down with your grandma and talk to your grandma about anatomy, it helps, even if it's sort of a one-way street there, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're very welcome. So I was going to ask, do you have a session today?
I do have a session today, right after class.
Okay. So, get going if you can go. Yeah, get going if you can go. Okay, very welcome. All right, so let's get back to, let's look at the schedule, which is what I have on the left-hand screen. No, your right-hand screen. So today is the 2nd. We're going to finish up with tissues. We're almost done with tissues. Then we're going to get into the integument system next week. And what is that again? Integumentary system is? Skin, yeah, it's one of those really weird words, but you got to know what it is. And then something about bones, an introductory chapter to bones. But don't forget, on Monday, it's a holiday, Labor Day holiday. So campus is going to be closed, library is going to be closed, your instructor is going to be on vacation. You can send me an email. I don't know, I might check emails, maybe not. But use some good study time. Use your planner to get some study time in on Monday and then all weekend long. So now is the time. You should really load a bunch of study time in so that when the test comes, you're not freaking out and you don't have to learn a whole bunch of new information, because the recall when you have new information in your mind is very poor. So try to learn everything you have to learn well before the exam, like at least by Monday, okay, the 14th, have everything done before class, which means what, Sunday. By Sunday night, you should have done everything. And then that will make lecture for bones really easy. That will make the test a lot easier as well. So how would you prepare for a lecture exam? What's the one resource you really want to pay attention to? The exam study guides. That's right. You can listen to the lectures again, and that will help you. But probably the most important thing is get organized by knowing what's in the study guide and what's not in the study guide, and get all of that material together. That is crucial. Right, and so your exam is, I'll answer your question in just a second, so today's the 2nd, so 1-2, exactly 2 weeks from today is that first exam, chapters 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, and we're two-thirds of the way done with that material. Yeah, good question over here. Okay, I heard something about a Blackboard the last day. Oh, study guides, those study guides should be there the whole semester. I don't know, maybe. Okay, I tell you what, I have Blackboard open right now. Somebody had a question about the weekly online quizzes, the deadlines for those. So let's take a look at that. So where do you find weekly online quizzes? Under the weekly assignments button, and I think I have it right here, weekly assignments button. So let's look, like so, and we're going to zoom in here. I think here is a syllabus quiz, and I think that goes away tomorrow. All right, so if you're going to do this quiz, make sure you do it by tomorrow. Week one was due August 27th. That was last Thursday. All right, and so let me just look and see, did I have it programmed properly? If I look down over here, it's no longer available. It was last available on August 27th. So we're past the deadline for that one. So what is due this week? Gee whiz, what week is this? Week number two. All right, and do you have anything to do in week number two? So here's week number two. Do you see anything that maybe you should do for week number two for course points?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I see a dollar sign. All right, so there are two chapters, chapter two and chapter four, are covered in this particular week. So if I zoom in here, let me see if, and it's due September 3rd, which is tomorrow, and that orientation page. So let's just look down the week two, quiz two, chapter two, cells, chapter four, tissues, quiz. And yeah, it's still available, but my guess is going to go away Thursday at 11 p.m. So you have to get that done by then. Raise your hand if you've done this quiz already. Woohoo! That's great. That's how you got to be. And if you've done the next week's quiz, if you're done with that, that's even better, because if you forget to do one of these, right, if you're 1 week ahead, then it doesn't hurt against you because it's already done. All right, so that's the weekly assignment. Somebody had a question about that. Did I answer your question about what quizzes are due today? Or, I'm sorry, tomorrow at 11? Yeah, okay. So there are two chapters, but one quiz due tomorrow. Okay, what is it, two and four? All right, another question was with regard to the study guides. So where are we going to find study guides? Sorry, I'm buzzing just a little bit today. So go into exam study guides. How do I have it organized? I have it by chapter. I like that. Oh, right there. Yeah, but that's for you. I could go in. I could change that. That's probably when I put all this information on the page.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so these are all good. Yeah, so if you work with these, that is great for this class, even though it is fall 15. Yeah, I didn't even see that there. Okay, fantastic. All right, so that's good for Blackboard, right? Any other questions regarding Blackboard? Hopefully it's becoming a little bit more intuitive to you how to mouse around in there and find the resources that you want. After you do a little while, I think it becomes pretty easy. Yeah? Okay, the? Yeah, okay, pre-lecture reading assignment. Here's pre-lecture reading assignments. All right, so click into here. And here is, look at that. Here's the folder that has all the assignments. All right, but these are ones that don't have answers to them. And so it's going to be in a folder that looks just like that, but I see it doesn't look just like that. Here it is right here. All right. And, okay, unfortunately there's four, so one is available, two is available. This one will become available September 2nd at 12 noon, which is just in about an hour. But for some reason, that folder is not enabled. So let me go back. There are four classes in here. I don't want to take time to do all four classes, but I will be able to at least enable 10340. There's a little button, permit users to view this content. Yeah, so if you ever see something, can't see something that you should be seeing, it could be just a little button or programming error that I made. Send me an email and I can correct that, right? So now these answer keys are going to be available to you, right? So that's a really good question. So the other thing is, don't be shy to ask me questions, because these computers have to be done just exactly perfectly, and sometimes I leave a little comma out or something like that, and it just screws things up. So let me know, and I can fix it fast, right? All right, so the other three sections I'll fix soon. Okay, so your test the 16th. Don't forget, October 12th, you're going to have a lecture exam and a practicum, the second practicum on the same day. For those of you that are in the Monday class, Wednesday class, that doesn't happen. But the Wednesday class will have a lecture exam and a practicum on the same day. What day is that? The very last day of the semester happens to be a Wednesday. So the Wednesday labs will get their last practicum and last lecture exam on that day. And exam number three does not overlap with a practicum, right? There's no practicum that's going to be the week ahead of time. All right, so that is the schedule. That's Blackboard. I'm glad we went over some of that stuff. Over the weekend, I'll build the webpage to put these lectures online so that you'll be able to listen to them again if you want. I've recorded them nicely. Yeah? Course code, I'm working with the publisher. There seems to be a hang-up. The course code, you have the access code, but you also, and I think if you log in proper, once it's arranged properly, all you will need is an access code to get to that online material and not any kind of course code, because Blackboard will handshake properly with Mastering, and as long as you register through Blackboard. If you register through the Pearson website, then I won't know what anatomy class you are in. But if you register through Blackboard, there's four different Blackboard courses in this lecture hall. So if you log in through your Blackboard, it will know exactly what CRN it is. So you won't need that. Okay. Okay. Oh, and I have a meeting this afternoon for that. Okay. All right. So, what were we looking at? We were looking at tissues, right? And what's the building block of a tissue? Cells, that's right. And what could you tell me about the function of cells that make up one tissue? The function. The same function, which means what? The same structure, right? So something that makes up a tissue are a bunch of cells with all the same shape and structure is what typically textbooks say. But of course, you know that if they have the same functions, they're going to have basically the same shape. Not just the shape of the cell, but the shape of the molecules on the inside, the shape of the organelles on the inside, the shape of everything from the molecular up to the macromolecular to the cell shape. All right, how many tissues do we have to learn about in this chapter? Four tissues, that's right, and they should be on the tip of your tongue. Epithelium is one. Connective tissue is another. There's another specialized for contraction, and that's called muscle, and then the last one is nervous tissue, right? And we got done with epithelium. Remember, the way that we characterize an epithelium, there are two important categories, and one is layers, and the other is by shape, right? And the way we count layers is one, many, right? Not one, two, three, four, five, it's just one versus many. So if it's many, it's stratified. If it's just a single layer, it's simple. All right, so I'll count the number of cells that I see in this epithelium that I'm pointing at right now. How many are here? Right. Okay, I'm not quite sure I heard. But the correct answer to me is many. You don't have to tell me a number, right? Because number really doesn't make sense. Unless it's simple, then it's got to be one. All right, so that will make things a lot easier. And then by shape, and these are like the best kind of shapes. When you look at a cell underneath a microscope, there's going to be artifacts. And so a square cell or a flat cell might not look exactly flat, or a cuboidal cell might not look exactly cuboidal, right? But if there's a cell that resembles one of these shapes, then you would call it a columnar, cuboidal, or squamous, and then with a layer, right? Like a stratified squamous epithelium, that would be a good example of your integument system. All right, so that's epithelium. The other thing is, epithelium, the cells are tightly packed together. There's no space between the cells. And there are connections called desmosomes between the cells that glue them together so that they don't move apart. And there were a number of different kinds of epithelia that you had to look at, and looked at them in lab. And I've lost the projector in lab, so I can't show you all these really nice pictures. So make sure you bring your textbook to lab this afternoon so that you have these slides available to you, and I'll just have to go over these things one-on-one with students that are looking through a microscope. And that's what you should be doing anyway, looking through a microscope, comparing what you see through the microscope with these very nice photographs that are inside your textbook. Because what's the value of this photograph inside your textbook like this? Why is that important? Because this is exactly what's going to be on the first practicum. It's going to be a picture, and it's a pictures from your textbook, so you should be able to identify this particular tissue, for instance. All right, we have a nice basement membrane, smooth and continuous. So here is a nice transverse section of a tube, so it looks circular, and if we count the number of cells from the basement membrane to the apical surface, I just see one, So this is a simple epithelium, and the shape of these cells right here are cuboidal. So this is a simple cuboidal epithelium. All right, I don't think I'm going to go over any other epithelia except for maybe this one here. All right, so you always start by finding the basement membrane. Look for some difference in tissue. Right, so find a line where the tissue looks different on the top compared to the bottom or the right and left side. Here is the basement membrane. Here is that free space. An epithelium covers a surface or lines a cavity, and in that cavity there's free space, or above that surface is free space. So this is the apical surface of this epithelium. Here's the basal surface. And this is a strange one. This one we don't say that it is stratified or simple or cuboidal columnar. When you see this epithelium, I see pillows lying on top. Right, so these cells are not flat. They're not cuboidal. They're not columnar. These are shape-shifting cells, and they will change shape all day long. There's an organ in your body that changes shape all day long, and that's your urinary bladder. We look over here. I see two kidneys. The kidneys have to produce urine every single second or they die, right? And of course you don't void, you don't eliminate urine from your body every single second. That urine is collected in the urinary bladder until there's a proper and convenient time to void. So that urine forces the bladder to expand, and then when you void, it shrinks back down, and then expands again, shrinks back down. This is the epithelium that lines that cavity of the urinary bladder. So it can stretch and shrink all day long. We call that a transitional. And the way that I kind of picture this is with these pillows that are lying on this apical surface, right? So that's kind of a special sort of epithelium. Connective tissue is what we got to. Next time we talked about the different kinds of glands, right? Cilia for motility. Right. I'm sure we talked about this slide in lecture. Here's an illustration of what a connective tissue would be like, and it's definitely not epithelium, because look at this big, here's a space right here, or a volume, and there's not even a cell anywhere in sight in this area. So that cannot be an epithelium, because the cells in an epithelium are tightly packed together. And if we find a cell, here is a cell. And if we go down below it, we got to go all the way over here to see another cell. So there's a big space between cells. And for connective tissue, the space between cells is what is important. There are structures inside the space that give connective tissue its particular properties. And that space between cells is so special, it's given a name. It's called the matrix. The matrix in the connective tissue. And here it says extracellular matrix. Well, yeah, this is true, but if you just say matrix, everybody knows it's extracellular. So again, it's like saying table mesa. Right? Okay. That's a really nice neighborhood I lived in Boulder, Colorado. But if you know Spanish, it's kind of silly to say that. Okay. So the matrix has a couple of different things. It has fibers in it, and it has spaces without fibers. The space without fibers is filled with ground substance. It's like a sponge that absorbs water. And then the fibers. Who knows the name of the three fibers starting with the strongest one? Collagen. I like it. And then what's the stretchy one?
Elastic.
That's not bad. And then the weakest one, almost worthless, is reticular fibers, right? So collagen, elastic, reticular fibers. Collagen. Connective tissue does have blood vessels in it, but epithelia does not. So here is a nice blood vessel. It can also have fat cells in it. So when you look at this kind of tissue, which is going to be areolar connective tissue, this one right here, you might see some blue cells or purple pink cells. You might see some yellow cells. Nonetheless, I do see collagen and elastic fibers. I don't see any reticular fibers. And it has all these interesting angles in it. Kind of reminds me of a stained glass window, right? And it might have a lot of colors to remind me of that too. So you know this is not epithelium, right? Is it obvious this is not epithelium? Yeah, because the cells are really far apart, right? Extensive matrix. All right, so how far did I get with connective tissue? Okay, this one I didn't talk about. This is a strange one. There's a couple strange ones, but this one indeed is strange. These are adipocytes. The job of an adipocyte is to store lipid or oil or fat inside the cell. And that material has a very high energy content, so these cells act like batteries for us. They store energy. And that lipid is stored in a vacuole inside the cell. So the important thing about adipose connective tissue is intracellular. But what did we say about connective tissue? What's the most important thing? It's the matrix, which is extracellular. So here is an exception to that rule. The important thing is inside the cell, which is lipid, right? But we still call it a connective tissue, right? So here is the matrix, right? Just these little areas right here. This is the extracellular material, and you can see that it's very small compared to oil that's inside this vacuole. So does everybody kind of understand what I'm saying, why this is a kind of exceptional connective tissue? Because connective tissue, the important thing is in the matrix, extracellular, but in adipose connective tissue, the important stuff is inside the cell, intracellular, right? And if you look at this underneath a microscope, it's not very interesting to look at because none of this fat absorbs a stain, and sometimes it's really hard to see because it's mostly just space that you can't see, right? You might see some very thin lines between the cells, and it kind of looks like a sponge. These are very highly branched and twisted fibers. These are reticular fibers. One thing that you'll notice, that reticular fibers stain very, very dark. That will be very obvious in lab. So this is a reticular connective tissue. And here I see some fibroblasts that are secreting these fibers into the matrix. This is a really nice classical kind of connective tissue because there's a big space between the cells. Here is an organelle inside one of the fibroblasts. It picks up a lot of stain, so this is not the whole cell. This is just part of it, one organelle. And what organelle is that? What organelle is this? This is a nucleus. That's right. It says right here, nuclei fibroblasts. If I ask you, name this cell, right, and here's a lead line. If I ask you, name this cell, what would you like to write down as an answer? A fibroblast, because a fibroblast is a cell, and what is a nucleus? An organelle. So there's a really big difference. If I ask you what organelle is this, you want to say nucleus. If I ask you what cell it is, you're going to say fibroblast, right? Everybody kind of see that distinction right there? All right, these are collagen fibers, very thick, strong fibers, and they all are oriented in the same direction, so this is what we call dense regular CT. When I say CT, what does that mean? Connective tissue. On a practicum, on that one little line where you have to put an answer, you can put CT, right? And you don't even have to tell me what CT stands for because I'm going to know it's for connective tissue. If it is an epithelium, you should put EPI, right? You don't have to spell epithelium all the way out because that might take up the whole line, but what I'm interested really is that subclassification of epithelium. Okay, on the practicum, an answer won't be epithelium, right? It will be some kind, like stratified squamous, simple cuboidal, that kind of stuff. But don't put down simple cuboidal CT, because is there such a thing as simple cuboidal CT? There is not, right? Somebody's mixing apples and oranges. Connective tissue has a matrix to it, right? And simple cuboidal is an epithelium, so you're mixing two different kinds of tissues together inappropriately. All right, so do you see these collagen fibers all kind of moving from right to left? If we go back to the previous slide, I see it's densely packed with collagen, but in this particular case, the fibers are oriented in all different kinds of directions, and so we call this dense irregular connective tissue. It's not extremely strong in one direction, but it's sort of strong in a whole bunch of different directions. And so this tissue is not used for tendons and ligaments like dense regular, but for making other kinds of structures like a joint capsule, which should be really strong. It protects the joint, a nice movable joint on the inside, but it doesn't experience an extreme amount of tension, for instance, compared to this tendon right here, which connects a bone to a muscle. And so this thing here would be dense regular connective tissue. We have some elastic connective tissue. These are elastic fibers, right, that we find in arteries. When you see a speckle pattern like this, you should know that is cartilage. And a cartilage cell or the name of a cartilage cell is called a chondrocyte. It's not a fibroblast. Fibroblast secretes fibers. And do you see fibers in this micrograph? You do not. Okay, so that's a nice characteristic of hyaline cartilage, or articular cartilage is the same thing. It holds a lot of water. It's kind of slippery and spongy. It protects the ends of bones, is why it's there. So bones that rub up against each other really don't, because they have this cartilage layer between them. Here's the cell that secretes the material into the matrix, and in this matrix right here, it is just ground substance. There are no fibers. A chondrocyte is suspended within a little bubble. That bubble is what we call a lacuna. And all cartilage will have chondrocytes inside of a lacuna, and there's a tissue kind of similar to cartilage, and that is bone. And bone has cells inside lacunae as well, but remember, chondrocyte is a cartilage cell, and cartilage cells don't exist in bone. Another kind of cell exists in bone, and that is an osteocyte. So anytime you hear osteo or osteum or something like that, you should think of bone. Whenever you hear or see chondro, you should think of cartilage, right? Okay. So here is hyaline cartilage, nice speckle pattern. This is the weakest kind. There are stronger kinds of cartilage, and you can see in the matrix some fibers. These fibers are branched, and this is what an elastic fiber looks like. So this is elastic cartilage. Here is a lacunae. Here is a chondrocyte inside that lacunae. So this would be, if I ask you the name of this tissue, let's say it out loud. What kind of tissue are we looking at? Okay. I tell you what. Who's got a good answer for me? And I'm going to pick on one person. Who knows a really good answer? Say the answer in your mind. Okay. Nobody wants to volunteer. But sometimes you just have to make a mistake for it to sink in, right? So it's okay. Still nobody. Okay. What kind of tissue is that? It's connective tissue. This is true. You want that in your answer. And specifically, you want to know what kind of connective tissue it is. So connective tissue is perfect, but that's a partially correct answer. The rest of the answer is elastic cartilage, CT, or connective tissue. Right? So elastic cartilage, CT, that tells me everything I want to know about this particular tissue. Right? So let's go back to this one. Who knows how to name this particular tissue? Hyaline cartilage. Partial correct answer. To finish it off, you should say connective tissue or CT. All right, so yes, it is a connective tissue, but it's a specific kind, hyaline cartilage. All right, so we have elastic cartilage, connective tissue, and there's even a third kind, which is fibrocartilage, and you don't have to say cartilage twice. Fibrocartilage, and what kind of tissue is fibrocartilage? Where does it fit in? It's a connective tissue, right? So fibrocartilage, connective tissue, I want to make sure you know that's not a muscle or nervous tissue or epithelium, right? So that's important. All right, so do you see this lacuna right here? And that cell inside that lacunae is a cartilage cell or a chondrocyte. I see a lot of fibers in this particular kind of cartilage, and these are big, thick fibers. This is the strongest kind of cartilage. And we call this fibrocartilage. Tell me the name of this fiber that makes it strong. Yeah, collagen. Collagen is the strongest fiber. Where this is located is in the joints between vertebrae, in particular the vertebral bodies, because that is supporting our body weight. And so that has to be a strong kind of cartilage, and it is fibrocartilage. Okay. All right, when you look at this, what do you see? Maybe don't think of anything that has to do with animals. I see something that reminds me of a plant. I see a tree trunk that's cut in a nice transverse section, and I see something that looks like tree rings, growth rings, right? Okay. And this is characteristic of bone. So it's not really the trunk of a tree or anything like that, but this is how bone grows. The name of the cell that we find in bone is not a chondrocyte. Can anybody remember what we called a name of a bone cell? Osteocyte. Right? So sometimes we call this osseous tissue. It's not labeled on the slide, but probably it should be. Right, so what kind of cell is in this lacunae right here? It is a osteocyte. So you should say osteocyte in a lacunae right here, just like cartilage, right? The chondrocytes are in a lacunae. All right, so I see a ring, and I see another ring on the outside of that, and another ring on the outside of that. These are what we call lamellae, or layers, and that gives bone a tremendous amount of strength and resisting compression. So if we put pressure on the ends of the bone and press to the middle, it's almost impossible to break a bone, right? But if we take the ends of a bone and try to bend it in the middle and snap it, then it's relatively easy. But it's almost impossible if you can compress it. Who's got a nice pencil or a pen I can have? Anybody have a pencil? Ah, look at this. How much do you pay for this? Maybe $25? Okay. Here's a pen. If I push on this pen from top to bottom as hard as I can, it's never going to break. Because what's going to happen? It's going to go right through my hand, right? Because it's a tube. It's a cylinder. It resists compression, and that's how bones are made. If I take this tube and I grab the ends and I start to bend it like that, it will be easy for me to break it, and then I would owe you $20. So I'm not going to do that in class, right? All right, so that is just one tube. And you can see, you can imagine me pushing it right through the palms of my hands. Bones are not just a tube. It's a tube inside of a tube, which is stronger. And then those tubes are inside of a tube, which is stronger yet, and all those tubes are inside of other tubes. Next two tubes inside tubes, so bones basically do not compress because of that structure. Right? Okay, so this is a really easy slide to see as being bone. All right, but what kind of tissue is bone? What would you want to say on a practicum? Bone CT. Yeah, don't say bone muscle, bone epithelium, or anything like that. CT. Here is kind of a strange connective tissue. You know it's a connective tissue because there's a big space between the cells, and this space right here is a fluid. This fluid we call plasma, and then you know that this is blood that we're looking at. So it is a connective tissue because it does connect your lungs with your heart, your lungs with all the muscles in your body, delivering oxygen, carrying away CO2. And the reason why it can connect all those different organs is because this tissue can flow, right, under normal circumstances. And if something goes bad, it can actually become a solid. But under normal circumstances, it should not become a solid in your body, because then it won't flow. That can happen to some people. It's very dangerous, and usually the outcome is really poor when that happens. All right, I see a couple different kinds of cells. These cannot be chondrocytes. They can't be osteocytes because it's not the tissue. These are blood cells. These are red blood cells. Another name for a red blood cell is erythrocyte. I don't care which one you use. These carry oxygen, all right, from your lungs to other parts of your body. These other ones are what we call white blood cells. I know they don't look white, but they fight infection. They're there for immune response, and I do want you to be able to recognize these two different cells and name them. So here is the nucleus of a lymphocyte. Right, it looks like just a big circle or a big sphere. It takes up almost the whole space inside the cell. That's a characteristic of a lymphocyte. And then over here is a neutrophil. It's another kind of white blood cell. And can you tell that the shape of the nucleus is different than a lymphocyte? Would you be able to tell that? Yeah. All right, so this could be an exact picture that you'll find on the practicum. And so just make sure you don't switch these names, lymphocyte and neutrophil. And if I say name this cell where I have the cursor right now, you will be partially right if you say white blood cell or leukocyte, but I would just give you a little bit of partial credit because you should be able to tell me it is what? A neutrophil in particular. Okay, neutrophil. And if I say what's the name of this tissue, what would you say? Blood CT, yeah, for connective tissue. Okay. All right, so I think that's pretty much all the connective tissues that we're looking at. Membranes. The membrane that separates your body from the outside world, we call that the cutaneous membrane or skin. That's, of course, a very large membrane. I can't remember if I've gone over this before, but on this particular slide, we see two major kinds of membranes. One is a serous membrane and one is a mucous membrane. And so I have to tell you what the difference is. A mucous membrane is a membrane that lines a cavity that's open to the outside world. So what about your oral cavity and your nasal cavity? Is that open to the outside world? Indeed it is. So there's a membrane that lines these cavities, and that is a mucous membrane. And the same thing for the trachea. And the same thing for the esophagus, because the esophagus is just connected to the oral cavity. And your nose is connected to the inside of the lung. All of these passageways inside the lung are lined with a mucous membrane because all of these passageways are open to the outside world. Some mucous membranes secrete mucus, but not all do. A lot of them do, but not all of them. So the definition of a mucous membrane has to be by where it's located, not by what's being secreted on the surface of that membrane, right? It's located on a cavity or in a cavity that's open to the outside world. Right, here we have a pair of lungs. There is a second kind of membrane. We looked at mucous membranes. The second kind of membrane is called a serous membrane, right? So you got mucus and serous. A serous membrane lines an organ deep inside the body that is not open to the outside world. So you got one that's open to the outside world, one that's not open to the outside world. And let's take a look at this particular figure here. So what is the cavity that the heart is in? Pericardial cavity. There's a membrane that is on, that surrounds that cavity. It's called the pericardial cavity. And it's, that cavity is not open to the outside world. Your heart should not be open to the outside world. It's inside that cavity, nice and protected. And if, sorry, I'm going to put that right. Oh, this is good. So here's the heart. I see some chambers inside the heart. Here's the surface of the heart. Here's the surface of the heart. Right on top of the surface of the heart is a membrane. And I think it's colored a little bit differently compared to these other dark lines. Maybe red or something. Does that look red to you, this line? Okay, so this is not a mucous membrane, but a serous membrane right on the surface of the heart. And then there's a space and then another part of that serous membrane. Okay, it's still surrounding the heart, but it's not touching it directly. It's really defining what the pericardial cavity is, the extent of the pericardial cavity. So this membrane is continuous, right? It's really the same kind of membrane, just folded back on itself, but since it's in two different locations, we have to give it a different name. And the name of this serous membrane that's right on the surface of the heart is called the visceral pericardium, because the heart is a visceral organ. So this is the visceral pericardium. And then as it moves out over here to the surface of that cavity, then we call this the parietal division of the pericardium. So we've got parietal pericardium, visceral pericardium, and are they touching each other on this illustration? They are not. Here is what we call the pericardial space or serous space. It's filled with the fluid. All right, so a serous membrane has three parts: a visceral division on the surface of the organ, a serous space filled with serous fluid, and then the parietal serous membrane that is lining the wall of the cavity in particular, which is different. Let's do one more example. Here are the lungs, the outside of the lungs. They're not open to the outside world. It's a visceral organ. So what kind of membrane is going to be covering the surface of a lung? Mucus or serous? Serous, because it's not open to the outside world. So here is the membrane on the surface of the lung. Oh, I tell you what, tell me the name of the cavity that the lungs are in. Pleural cavities, right. So the name of the membrane right on the surface of the lung is the visceral pleura. Then you have, right, the serous space. And then on the wall of the thorax, you have the parietal pleura, because it's a serous membrane. And there are three divisions to every serous membrane. And if we trace this around, we can see that it really is continuous, but it's in two locations so that it has two different names. All right, the next kind of tissue that we're going to look at, okay, is muscle tissue. When you look at this slide right here, those of you that didn't have lab yet, all right, this is kind of new information. Even those of you that had lab this morning, I couldn't show you the slide because the computer wasn't working. So pay attention to this. When you look at this picture right here, does it remind you of a connective tissue or an epithelium, or does it have some other kind of characteristic that is kind of jumping out at you? There is something else that's jumping out at me. Maybe it will jump out at you. Is all of these stripes, right? We don't call them stripes. We call them striations, right? So you see striations very easily in muscle tissue, but you don't in epithelium. You don't in connective tissue. These striations are there because of the internal machinery that causes these cells to contract. And we're going to look at that when we get into muscle. Right now, I just want you to know that striations are there in this particular kind of tissue, which is skeletal muscle tissue. This is what skeletal muscle tissue looks like. It's very long, narrow, and not branched. It's long and linear, and it has striations. That's a characteristic of skeletal muscle. These cells can have many nuclei inside of them. That is strange. And that's because this muscle cell right here at one time was a number of very short cells that joined together to form one big long one, and all those nuclei are still left over inside the cell. Since it's long and narrow, it's called a fiber, a muscle fiber. And a muscle fiber is, by definition, a skeletal muscle cell and not another kind of muscle cell, just skeletal muscle. Here is a nice illustration of a skeletal muscle fiber. What's another name for skeletal muscle fiber? A skeletal muscle cell, right? Cell and fiber for skeletal muscle are synonyms of each other. And most people just say fiber. All right, so here we have a cell. What's the purpose of a muscle cell? What does it do? It contracts, right? So it's contracting. It produces motion. So I don't like motion as a function of a skeletal muscle or any kind of muscle cell, but contraction, I think, is a better way to think about it. So when a skeletal muscle cell contracts or shortens, something moves. And what is that thing that's moving, or what is a skeletal muscle cell connected to, is another way of asking that question. What's a skeletal muscle cell connected to? As in the name. It's connected to your skeleton, which are your bones. So when a skeletal muscle cell contracts, your bones move, your skeleton moves. And of course then you move as a result of that. And you have control when this muscle contracts, right? If I want to have a cup of coffee right now, I can reach out, grab this cup of coffee. All those skeletal muscles in my arm can't say, no thank you, I'm busy doing something else. They just obey. That's all they can do is contract, right? They obey exactly. We call that voluntary muscle. And skeletal muscle is voluntary. All right, so that's pretty good for skeletal muscle. You got two other kinds. Anybody know some other kinds of muscle? There's a muscle that makes up the heart. And we call that cardiac muscle. And it has some characteristics of skeletal muscle. In that, what do you see? I see striations. So the internal machines that cause shortening are the same in cardiac muscle compared to skeletal muscle. But there are some differences, right? The extent of a cardiac muscle cell is short. So it goes from here to here, and that's it. They are very short. And they're not linear. I see a branch, and I see a branch over here. So cardiac muscle cells are striated, but they're short, and they're branched. And if the cell that I'm pointing to right now contracts, and the one on the left contracts, they will have a tendency to pull apart from each other, and then you'll have a hole in the heart. So that doesn't happen. So here is that special junction or union between these two cells that are on the right and the left. That is called an intercalated disc. So it's just a special material, desmosomes that connect these two cells together so that they cannot separate. It has some other things in it, like a gap junction that allows electrical communication from one cell, on the cell on the left, into the right. And then that electrical information can get passed to the cell that's further on the right and then further on the right. That electrical signal causes these cells to contract. So if one cell contracts and generates an electrical signal, it travels through the whole heart and it causes the whole heart to contract. And that's how it should contract as a unit. You can't have one part of the heart contracting while the other is relaxing, because blood will just slosh around inside the heart and not get pumped out. So the whole heart has to contract as a unit, and it's part of this intercalated disc that allows that to happen. These striations are not as prominent as in skeletal muscle, this is really prominent. Cardiac muscle, not so prominent, but I still can see them. Here is the third kind of muscle cell, and I don't see any striations here whatsoever. And these are smooth muscle cells. Think of a football. It's a ball with two pointy ends. We'll grab the ends of that football and pull it further apart to make the ends even more pointy and make that football even longer. That will be another kind of gait, right? You heard of inflate gait. I don't know if this is stretch gait. So stretch gait these cells. Stretch them out, okay? And here I can see it. These are smooth muscle cells. They contract, right? But since they don't have striations, they have different kinds of machines inside of them that cause them to contract. So we can look forward to that. We find, understanding that a little bit later, we find this kind of muscle in the walls of organs inside our body cavities, like in the walls of the stomach and intestine and the urinary bladder, right? The reproductive tract, respiratory tract, digestive tract has smooth muscle. Smooth muscle is involuntary, and you can't tell a smooth muscle anywhere in your body to contract or to relax. When it goes into spasm, sometimes smooth muscle is very painful and you sure would wish you would be able to relax it just with your conscious thought, but it doesn't happen. Right, so it is involuntary. It's controlled, so it's involuntary muscle, smooth muscle. The heart, which is right here, is like smooth muscle because it is involuntary. You can't willfully think and cause your heart to stop, right, or to change rhythm very easily. Right, so it is involuntary as well. Right, you can do some tricks maybe to control how rapidly this muscle contracts. Like, for instance, right now I could say, okay, I'm going to turn the lights on, put your books away. We're going to have a quiz, just a pop quiz. All right, is everybody ready for a pop quiz? What happened to your heart rate? It probably went up, right? So you don't have control of your heart, but your instructor has control of your heart. But actually, you do have control of your heart if you meditate and things like that, or via what you're thinking. Okay, so but it's not like controlling skeletal muscle. It's a different kind of thing. All right, so that's muscle. How many different kinds? There's three different kinds. You should know which one is voluntary, which one is involuntary, which one is striated, which one is not striated. Where do you find these muscles? Well, you have some muscles attached to your skeleton. That's skeletal muscle. Yeah. So there are two types of muscle that are involuntary. That's your heart and smooth muscle. Okay. Skeletal muscle, when you tell it to contract, it always contracts, can never make up its mind. The heart and smooth muscle, okay, can make up its own mind at some times. All right, so the heart does not need nerves to contract. We could rip out somebody's heart, put it on the table, and just like Raiders of the Lost Ark, that heart is going to contract by itself on the table, right? Because it doesn't require any kind of control. But it can be influenced by your nervous system and hormones inside your body. But inherently, it has its own rhythmicity. Some smooth muscle is like that as well. Right, it does not need hormones or nervous input, and some smooth muscle has input from multiple locations, different kinds of input, and when a signal goes to a smooth muscle, it can look at all of the other information coming to it and decide for itself whether it's going to contract at that time or not, and to what degree. And remember, skeletal muscle can never do that, can never make a decision, it just automatically contracts. Smooth muscle can make up its mind depending on different kinds of signals that it gets from different parts of your body. All right, so those are the three kinds of muscles. Here is a slide of nervous tissue. And what I really like to focus on is the illustration, and then we're going to come back and look at the micrograph. So let's look at the illustration right here. Okay, nervous tissue, let's go over to the word slide first. Nervous tissue is made up of two different kinds of cells. The first kind is a neuron, and the function of a neuron is that it conducts electrical impulses. If you want to put in electrical, that might be really good, right? For some reason, when I wrote that out, I thought everybody would know that an impulse is an electrical event, but that's obvious, that can't be true, right? So put electrical. Okay, and the second kind of cell is a neuroglial cell, or a neuroglia cell. It's a support cell. It does not conduct electrical impulses, but it helps maintain the health of neurons, and it might tell neurons where to go in the body or how to branch, right? Different kinds of information. So both are very important. When we get to the nervous system, we'll look at neuroglia in a little bit more detail, but for now, we want to know something about a neuron, the structure of a neuron. So here I see a neuron, and it's in this yellow color. Here is the major part of the neuron, and the nucleus is inside that area. We call this the cell body, right? Or we can call it the soma. Soma means body. And I see a bunch of rough endoplasmic reticulum and a bunch of organelles inside the cell body, but this is the cell body. And then coming off the cell body, I see some projections, right? A projection off of a major part of a bone or a cell is called a process. So these are processes. All of these projections, all these like spikes coming out are what we call processes. There are some that are relatively short and highly branched. They're attached to the cell body. All of these things are called dendrites. These are dendrites. And then in this particular example of a neuron, there is one process that is very long, a single long process, and then it branches into some smaller ones. This is what we call an axon. So those are the three major parts of a neuron. There are, and I'm going to change the order in how I first describe them. There are dendrites that's attached to the cell body, which is attached to an axon. Those are the three parts: dendrites, cell body, axon. And the way information flows through this neuron is always from a dendrite through a cell body, then down an axon to this tip of an axon. So you could draw an arrow. And which way should that arrow be pointing? To the left or to the right? It should be pointing to the left. Go ahead, draw it in your notes, right? So information never goes back the other way. It doesn't mean information can't go in two different directions in your body. It can, but then you need another neuron that is flipped over, that is pointing in the opposite direction. Okay. So does everybody see a dendrite right here? Highly branched, kind of short. Here's the cell body with a bunch of organelles, and then one really long process that we call, who knows what this really long process is called? That is an axon. Yep, that's an axon. I see another kind of cell, kind of more in a gray or whitish color. These are the second kind of cells. These are neuroglia cells. And you can see it's surrounding the axon. The axon is going right through them. These cells, that kind of look like, well, it kind of looks like a really stretched out thin roll of toilet paper around this axon right here. Okay, that's not a bad way to think of it. They don't send electrical impulses, but they help the axon do its job. These are called neuroglia cells. Right, so I can see both kinds of cells on this illustration. So if I go back here, here is a neuron. Here's the cell body. Here's one long axon coming out of it. The dendrites are so branched and thin, I don't even see any dendrites on this particular cell. All right, so I just see part of a neuron. This is a really good way to visualize what a neuron looks like in terms of nervous tissue. All right, membranes. We talked about membranes, right? The difference between a serous membrane and a mucous membrane. Mucous lines a cavity that's what? Mucous membrane lines a cavity that is open to the outside world. And a serous membrane lines a cavity that is not open to the outside world, right? It's all contained inside your body. Mucous membrane only has one division. How many divisions does a serous membrane have? It's got three. It's got the visceral division on the organ itself, right? And then there's a parietal division that's on the wall of the cavity that it's sitting in, and then there's a space between those two. And that is what we call the serous cavity filled with serous fluid. So you got visceral division, parietal division, and the serous space between them. Okay. Some other membranes. All right. Cutaneous membrane, that's your skin. It's classified as an other membrane right here, but that is your biggest membrane in your body, right? But it's still other compared to serous and mucus. Synovial cavity is inside joints inside your body, but special joints that allow motion of bones. And we're going to look when we get into bones, actually when we get into the joint chapter, then we're really going to study what a synovial cavity is. Another membrane. Every bone, oh, I tell you what, let's start here. What does peri mean? I don't think I've defined that for you. I think I defined for most people what epi means. What does epi mean?
On top.
On top of, right. So in lab, you're going to see something called epidermis. The epidermis sits on top of what? The dermis. Epidermis is on top of the dermis. Peri means surrounding. Not sitting on top, but surrounding. And osteo, whenever you hear this term osteo or osteum or whatever, something like that, what should you think? A bone. So periosteum is a membrane that sits and surrounds that superficial surface of a bone, periosteum. All right, there's also an endosteum. There's a membrane on the inside of the bone that fills all the cavities that are inside the bone or lines the cavities that are inside of a bone. And why do you know the endosteum has something to do with a bone? Because osteo is part of the word, right? So you know that's a membrane that has something to do with a bone. Endosteum on the inside, peri on the outside. Here are two words that I'll mention, and you'll become familiar with them. Many organs have different divisions in them. Some parts of organs are superficial, they're more on the outside, and as you go deeper and deeper and deeper inside the organ, it changes. Right? And so the superficial part of an organ is called the cortex. And so the outside surface of a bone is what we call the cortical surface because it's very superficial. The deeper parts of an organ are called the medulla. So deep inside the bone, that's the medullary part of a bone. There are some organs in your body, like the kidney. And when you get to the kidney, you'll see it's very obvious that the superficial part is a lot different than the deep part. So the kidney has a cortex, and the kidney has a medulla. Which one is the deep one in the kidney, the medulla or the cortex? The deep one is the medulla. Like the renal medulla is the inner part of the kidney. The adrenal gland also has a difference in structure between the superficial and deep parts. So there is a adrenal medulla and an adrenal cortex. And the adrenal cortex is which one? The superficial or the deep one? It's the superficial part of the adrenal gland. All right, so get a little bit familiar with these two terms, medulla and cortex. That will be pretty important. Okay. So that's it for tissues. And I want to say something about what's on the quiz for course points next week. Okay? So we're not done with class. When are we done? 12:15? Oh, 12:05. Okay. We can do it. We still can do it. All right. Monday's class. I told you that the next quiz will be draw layers of the integument. All right, that's what I told people on Monday. And I have to change that. I know. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change that drawing into, what should I change it into? To make people, to kind of make amends for people, because I told you it's going to be the quiz, it's not going to be the quiz. So what should I do? I can make it extra credit. You still have to draw it, and then it will be extra credit, right? But here is what's going to be on the quiz next time. So the Monday group, do you have school next Monday?
No.
You do not. You have school, what, in almost 2 weeks, right? So you got plenty of time to prepare for the lab quiz. And let me show you what's going to be on the lab quiz. And it has to do with this. On that first practicum, you got labs 1, 2, and 3. Now, what is the material on lab number 3? The skull. Okay? And people that are in the Monday lab, because of that holiday, won't have a lot of time to prepare for the practicum and the skull. There's a lot of bones in the skull, and it's a whole new different kind of topic. So to get you prepared for that lab, number 3, what I want you to do is label something. All right, so all labs will do this the next time for a quiz. And it is, let me go over here, let me go here. And I want to describe this to you so that you're familiar with it. axial skeleton. Okay. This figure right here. And I've done this every semester, and before you take this quiz, there's almost nobody that wants to take this quiz, and you feel a little challenged with this material, but I've asked every single student in my class, after they take the quiz, in preparation for that lab that goes over the skull, and I asked them, was it a waste of time, or was it really helpful to know something about the skull before you come to lab? And every single student has said, absolutely, it is so helpful to know something about the skull before lab. So this is going to be your quiz, which is before you're going to look at the skull. So let's go over an orientation of this. All right, so I see a bunch of bones over here. All right, so there are bones in different colors. So you do have to know the names of some of these bones. The bone on the top of the head and in the front or anterior, this is the frontal bone. And it's named such, frontal bone. Okay. The bone right behind it is parietal bone. You have a drag and drop exercise in Blackboard where you can practice this over and over and over again. And if that's not helping, then go ahead and draw it out. That is really good if you can just draw this out. If you can draw it out on a blank piece of paper, then you have a really good picture in your mind that you can use any time. All right, so we've got frontal bone, parietal bone. The one way in the back is occipital. And you're going to become really familiar with all these bones, so now is a good time to become familiar with them. There are joints between bones in the skull. All right, so here I see a joint, looks kind of jagged and ragged right here. That's an immovable joint. That part of your skull doesn't move whatsoever. That is called a suture. The general name for suture, this joint is a suture. So here's a suture. Here's a suture, here's a suture, here's a suture, and of course you are right, they all have different names. The one that separates the frontal from the parietal is the coronal suture, right? And as a matter of fact, what plane is this lying in? Maybe we should review planes. What plane is this? This is sagittal. If you want to say mid-sagittal, that's fine. What plane is this?
Transverse.
What plane is this? Coronal or frontal, and guess what this plane fits right into? The suture between the frontal and parietal bone, so this is called the coronal suture. If you say frontal suture, that's probably not too bad. I would know what you're talking about. Right? So I see all these sutures. Lambdoid suture between parietal and occipital. Squamous suture between this is the temporal bone and the parietal bone. What does squamous mean? Flat. This is a flat part of your skull, and here's a suture, so we call this the squamous suture. All right, so we got names of bones, we got some joints that you should know about. There is one joint, there's only one joint in the whole skull that is movable, and that is the joint between your lower jawbone. Okay, look at this and tell me, what's the name of the lower jawbone? Mandible. Yeah, mandible. Okay. So it's the joint between the mandible and the temporal bone. This is the joint that allows you to open and close your mouth. It's called the temporomandibular joint. Remember, in anatomy, we can combine structures as long as we put an O between them. Right? So temporomandibular joint, because it's between the temporal bone and the mandible. Oh, it's not even listed on this slide. But anyway, this is the only joint that's movable. Nice joint. So this is the temporal bone. There's a hole right here that your ear is connected to. This is how sound energy enters the temporal bone. This is a meatus. So we got bones, we got sutures, we got this hole right here called a meatus. And then we have some bumps on bones. I see this big bump right here. And I see a smaller one that's a lot narrower. Here's another bump on this bone. And these are all processes. Remember these extensions off of a neuron? Those are called processes. These are extensions from these various bones. And the function of a process is that's where a muscle attaches. And so it's got to be a stronger part of a bone because a muscle is going to be pulling on this area. Here is the mastoid process. This one narrow one here reminded somebody of a pen that you write with, and back then it was a feather. And so we call this what? The styloid process. Here's the coronoid process. This is important for chewing. And here is another process that's sticking off of the temporal bone. We're going to call this the zygomatic process. What are some other bones you have to know? All right, lower jawbone, mandible, upper jawbone, maxilla. The cheekbone is a zygomatic bone. It's a very prominent bone. We recognize each other by the shape of the zygomatic bone. The bone on the bridge of the nose. This is really easy. Nasal bone. Okay. There are some other bones that help make up the socket that the eyeball sits in. That's what we call an orbit. The socket right here. There's some bones that make up that socket. So we have got nasal here. Look, some of the maxilla actually helps make up that orbit. And then we have a lacrimal bone. And then we have an ethmoid bone. So you're going to have to practice these a little bit. One more bone, and this is going to be a really easy bone to know. Here is a sphenoid bone. All right, so if when we go from anterior to posterior on the top of the head, what do we have? Frontal, parietal, occipital. When we look more on the side, what do we have? We have, okay, let's start here. Nasal bone, maxilla, zygomatic, sphenoid, and temporal. Maybe that's a good way to kind of get familiar. Just put these bones in a line. Some other landmarks that you should know. So we got sutures, we have processes. This indentation here is a meatus. We also have holes. And a hole in a bone is called a foramen. And here is a foramen in the mandible. It's called the mental foramen. And this is the mental region of the mandible. So when you learn bones, you learn a whole bunch of other kind of anatomy. There's a muscle in this area. And you could probably take a guess what's the name of the muscle in this part of the mandible. It's called the mentalis, right? It's named after this area. So here is a mental foramen. And the function of a foramen is it's a passageway. Things go through bones at these locations, like maybe a blood vessel, a vein, or an artery, or even nerves go through here. So here's another foramen. Oh, you don't have to name that one for the quiz. Right? So it's going to be this picture and label them. So you got processes, you got sutures. Alright. There's one other thing, right? Foramen is a condyle. Condyle is another name for a surface that is very smooth. And it's used for making a joint. So this is really not a process, right? This is the mandibular condyle. It helps make up that joint that is movable, your TMJ or temporomandibular joint. A condyle is smooth. It's large, right? This area is larger than the other part of the mandible down below it, but it's going to be smooth, and hyaline cartilage is going to cover this. And it is there for motion so that the mandible can move within the temporal bone without grinding each other away. That's the important thing. All right, so we got a suture, we got a process, we got a meatus, we got a condyle, got a foramen. And then sometimes a structure will have a 90 degree bend in it. So here is the mandible, and then it makes a 90 degree bend. You see that nice 90 degree bend right here? This part of the mandible that helps make that 90-degree bend is called a ramus. Some nerves have rami or a ramus, right? So again, that's important nomenclature that you'll use through actually the whole class. Right? A ramus. Here's the angle. A lot of bones have angles. And I think that really is really good for all these special little features of a bone. So know the names of the bones, but some of these special features as well. So the sign in, so this is for the quiz for next time. And for next time, also the extra credit. Okay, okay, hold on. Question, good question.
When you were talking about the temporal, if it's not on there, do you
still have to know it? Nope. Yep. Just this figure right here. The extra credit is drawing. And the lab that this afternoon, you don't know what that is, I'll show you this afternoon. But I drew it on the board. Layers of the skin. Yeah. All right, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet, please. Thank you, you too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Day, so I have to know all that
The skull.
The skull. And
yep.
Is that chapter 7?
Yes. 7.4.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Everyone's lecture exams are all the same day, right?
Like yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just one big, huge class for lecture exams. I don't have one either.